Hello and welcome to Think Rant, the podcast that, if it were an ex-girlfriend, would be that very needy and psychopathic one that practically stalked you for a few months after you finally plucked up the courage to ditch her. But there's still a small place in your heart for her because she let you do that thing to her in the bedroom that your current girlfriend doesn't. You know the one, you dirty pervert. Today is the 22nd of September 2011 and I'm your host, John Stabler. Joining me this week are my regular co-hosts, the first of which has recently been voted the 43rd sexiest podcaster with a beard by the readers of Saga magazine. It's Stephen Brett.
Good evening, and I'd just like to say a quick hi to all my fans.
And also with us is a man who narrowly missed out on the lead role in the latest Superman reboot movie because of his unsightly bulge when wearing blue lycra. It's Trevor J. Williams.
You know where that bulge was.
Towards the back somewhere, wasn't
it? It's a shame, yeah.
Welcome to the show, and here are the usual announcements for you. You can download previous episodes and subscribe to our feed by searching for Think Rant on iTunes. You can also download episodes directly from our blog, which you'll find at thinkrant.blogspot.com. We also like feedback, so feel free to send us your thoughts and feelings to our email address, which is info@thinkrant.co.uk, tweeting us at thinkrant, or by finding us on Facebook. If you like the show, then please join the Facebook group and leave us some love on the blog. You can also help us spread the awesomeness of our show by leaving us a review or rating on iTunes or whatever podcast directory or thing you found. That is all. Thank you.
No, that's not all. Don't forget to apologise for the unedited state. But that's it takes 1.21 gigawatts of electricity to edit the podcast, and the only way to generate that amount of power is a bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where one's going to strike.
Actually, I do, Trev.
Really? You must have some kind of psychic powers, Steve.
I do. I have a flyer in my hand. It's going to strike the top of the Hill Valley clock at 11 p.m.
You do realize Hill Valley's not a real place?
Yeah, it is. I'll find it on Google Maps now.
Okay, fine. So how's your week been, Trev?
How's yours been?
Ah, mine's pretty shit.
Fair enough.
I work for a living, Trev.
Oh, yeah. You poor bastard.
Stephen's been ill, haven't you, Steve?
Yeah, I've been off work all week. I have tonsillitis.
So he thought he'd come and share it with me.
Quite nasty as well it's been, but it's settling down now.
Lovely. Okay, this week is Trevor week, so Trevor's going to go first with the story.
Okay, well, might have been nice to tell Trevor. This is Trevor week.
I'm just week. You know, testing that's your professionalism.
Oh, shit. In the same way that a doctor checks somebody's prostate.
I prefer the surprise method.
I'll just stand
method.
Behind you, Trev. Go and look at that thing just ahead. Don't turn around. And whoop, off you go. Well, I've got a story from yesterday's Metro, which says, gamers can't tell real world from fantasy. Hardcore gamers become so immersed in virtual worlds that they turn to imaginary consoles to zoom into people in crowds or to pick things up from the floor. Some teenagers even confess that flashbacks from games can blot out real life, and others admit to fantasizing about running over and killing pedestrians. The story bangs on for another couple of paragraphs. But basically, they asked some kids, it was 42 gamers, only 42 of them they asked, aged 15 to 21. And it's clear what they were looking for. You know when you play Tetris, and you play it for ages and get a really good score? And then everything you look at, you're thinking, it's all made of blocks, and how can I fit things in? Just for a second.
Not just for a second.
You do get that. Yeah. Well, yeah, it can go for a couple of minutes. That weird thing of I'm slotting things.
I have to admit, when I was in university, my friend had a brand new PlayStation 1, hot off the press, first person like I ever knew to own one, and he brought it back to university with him. He had two games. One was Crash Bandicoot, the other was Wipeout 2097. We spent all night playing Wipeout 2097 or whatever it was, or 47, whichever. And in the morning, when I was walking home, which is probably after about 14 hours of Wipeout, I was actually walking and controlling myself using a controller in my hands because I was that tired I really just was walking, and I was air braking left and right to go round things.
That's right. And I did exactly the same thing, an all-night session with the PlayStation, and mate came over and we played Worms. And that was the one and only evening of my life where, I don't know if you've ever played any Worms on any console.
Did you start walking down the street going, "Hi, Arken!"
Prod. You know when you're standing about to cross the road waiting for the green man? Prod. I didn't do that, obviously. But no, I actually got good at the bazooka at a distance. Yeah. I don't know if you know, but that's very tricky to do that at a distance.
It's a talent you need to pick up.
And by about 4 or 5 in the morning, oh, I was killing it. But obviously, this is a story in the Metro that's almost all bollocks. It's a study of 42 people. That's not really a study at all. And they're clearly, they know what they're asking for. Mm. And of course they're going to get it. And they're just mentioning things like one 15-year-old named Simon admitted wanting to use a gravity gun from Half-Life to fetch something from the fridge.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Well, great. That means it's a regular 15-year-old with an overactive imagination.
That's great.
Have you met teenagers?
I wanted a hoverboard like on Back to the Future.
Yeah, not with Bernie. Okay. Sometimes I wish I could just do things with the power of my mind. Like, you know, quite often I think, wouldn't it be just cool to, you know, not have to walk over there to do that? But I don't see how that all of a sudden makes me an unbalanced individual.
Yeah, rather than walking all the way over there, why couldn't I just fire one portal over here and one over there?
It'd put my hand through it, yeah. So basically, it's just one of these video games are evil stories, dressed up with a very poor study.
So-called scientific study.
Mm.
Maybe the scientists were actually just doing preliminary work for something in the future, and then it's been blown up out of what they intended. But it's not the only thing in the papers this week full of that sort of tat. Very depressing. But yeah, while you were saying about all the other games, I was just reminded about, you know, if you play Tetris for ages and you're always looking around for, if you see a hole, you just got to fill it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the excuse that I gave the missus, anyway. she didn't go for it. Oh, I was in trouble.
Well, when you find out as well that it's L-shaped, it's always disappointing. Now, I don't want you to get too excited, but apparently Steve's got a story.
What, eh? What gives you that impression?
You did say to me earlier that you actually had two stories, but I didn't want to, you know, really freak Trev out with that.
I actually had three stories, didn't I? But, you know,
bloody hell.
You're going to be like that. Well, I'll start off with this one first of all, just because it's an old one of ours, which has popped back up again. And that is the Daily Mail have yet again published the same photographs of Cardiff and the same drunk people in Cardiff that I'm sure they've published already twice this year prior to this, just saying, look at how bad all these drunken people are in Cardiff. And this is what foreigners are now laughing at us in all other parts of Europe where these photos are on display, as well as all over the internet where we've published them three times.
Have you seen these pictures, Trev?
I haven't. Unless, are they the ones that showed that in Cardiff there were girls wearing skimpy party dresses?
That's right.
Even through the ridiculous cold weather when the cold snapped like a year and a half ago.
Yeah, it's the same
it's
set of photos.
It's those very pictures. Oh, yeah. Shit.
It is the same photos.
That's journalism at work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Wow. They're pretty impressive pictures. To be honest, I think you can go either way because I'm quite happy for Cardiff to have the party kind of.
But apparently it's making Great Britain the laughing stock, John.
Well, you know, I mean, I think we're already the laughing stock anyway. This is just, you know, feigning to care.
But having a laughing stock amongst those who credit the word of the Daily Mail is not a bad thing to be.
No, exactly. Exactly.
She's quite hot, though.
He's just pointing at pictures of unconscious women on the floor. You often point at unconscious women and say, she's hot.
And there's one for you as well, John.
Okay. Well, that guy
on the,
is...
On the one hand, it's pretty bad radio to say about a picture, I think she's hot. But I think it's probably good that the nice ladies and gentlemen can't see the
can't
fact
see
that you're
them,
pointing at an unconscious woman.
Yeah, that was the idea. So yeah, check out the Daily Mail. You've seen
bad
the photos
Stephen.
Before.
Bad.
It's well, you know, I'm sure they've done them twice this year, you know, already. So it's just old photos. But yeah, apparently people in Cardiff drink.
And get drunk.
Yeah, who'd have thought?
I mean, they were probably all taken on Black
There's
Friday.
No apparently about it. I've been to Cardiff.
Yes.
Okay. Right. I'm going to do a story. Don't sound shocked.
Go for it.
Now.
Oh, we're in awe.
So you should be. Now, this is news. We're sticking with Welsh news. I know we don't usually do a lot of local news, but staying in Wales, Neath psychic Dawn Pearson claimed £33,000 worth of benefits. Now, yeah, she didn't see this coming, did she? The usual psychic joke. Yeah. Basically, she was on some kind of incapacity benefit. She said she was too ill to work, so she's been claiming a lot of benefits. But she was at the same time she was featured on a psychic hotline which was charging punters £1.53 per minute. You know, so let's just say that she makes 50p at that, 50p a minute. I can't work out the maths, but it's probably more than I get paid.
Is that 30 quid an hour?
30 yeah. quid an hour, yeah, yeah. So that's not bad.
That's quite a good return.
So, but more than anything, I was just going to use this story to segue into the big psychic story of the week, of course, which is the news of Sally Morgan has allegedly been caught using prompters and hidden microphones and, earpieces or whatever to get information about the punters in the show. Now, you've definitely heard of this, haven't you, Trev?
I definitely have, but I think we should be wary of it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they were apparently believers that have reported this.
Right.
But there's some legs left in this story. There's some mileage left. And it could turn out to be that they work for some other psychic. You know, they could be in her pay. And that it's just more publicity for her. And it'll turn out that they lied. And the fact that they lied, of course, doesn't mean that she's actually psychic. But that's how she'd spin it.
Sure. So, you know, the person who rang it was an Irish radio station, just called
the show in Dublin, was it?
Apparently there were other callers who called the station to confirm that they had also seen the same thing. So it's not just one person's anecdote.
No, apparently so. It was several people.
So, interesting. I mean, the story itself is not surprising for me. But
I don't think it's surprising for any of us, really, John, is it?
No, but it was surprising for some people who instantly needed to defend her.
It certainly wasn't surprising for Psychic Sally, was it? Because she already knew.
Yeah, she already knew she was going to get busted. So why she didn't tell them to just not open the window in the first place, I don't know.
Well, maybe that's proof that actually it's real, because like she didn't feel the need to tell them to shut the window because she wasn't getting any messages from them anyway. I don't know. I'm talking bollocks.
The only way, if the reports from the people who said that they overheard the people feeding them the information, if those reports were correct, the only way in which her being psychic isn't absolute bollocks would be that there are a bunch of trickster ghosts who thought it was just piss your pants funny to not tell her about any of this stuff. But they saw it was all going on, and they were all saying, "Shh, don't tell her! The window's open! Brilliant!" And, you know, I quite like that. If there were going to be any truth to the idea of them talking to the dead, the idea that the dead would screw with them is, I think, quite comforting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I reckon.
But, like, how come you never hear... Right, and this is maybe, you know, just looking into it a lot. How come you never hear of a psychic when they start talking to a ghost? All of a sudden, they say something shocking. Instead of just the usual bollocks about how, he's happy now, there's no pain, he's in a better place, he loves you.
Yeah, he's happy now because he's rid of you at last, you whining old cow.
Just to let you know, he's in heaven, and but he's met his first wife who's up there, and they're going to make a go of it again. So find yourself someone else, and then when you go up there, you won't be on your own. How come there's none of that? That's what I want to see.
Yeah. Or he always felt like he was a woman trapped in a man's body, so now he's called Daphne up here in heaven. So, I don't know what you're going to do when you get ill up.
He decided that eternity was just too long to deny the fact that he was actually a gayer. It's a long time to be in the closet, eternity. It really is.
That is true.
So, does anyone else want to do a story, or could I just keep on going?
Because no, I've got a story from Australia.
Ooh, g'day, mate. Yeah.
From the Ripper. Are you good?
Is it a Ripper?
Yeah, give that another go.
Hang on a second, Steve. Whenever we do a story from a foreign country, are you going to put on a NAF accent? Because this could be your feature.
This could be... Okay, I'll try it, yeah.
Yeah, go on then. So start again, Trev.
Is it going to be a Ripper, Trev?
Okay. Steve's casual racism. Okay, from the Canberra Times.
Bonza.
Oh, God, they're all going to come out. Anyway, the story goes, not funny, comic readers not as smart. Parents should be alert, if not alarmed, the next time their child picks up a comic book. The latest report from the OECD into education shows reading is on the decline among students across the developed world, and the enjoyment of comic books over fiction and non-fiction works is generally associated with a low level of reading performance. And poor reading performance then feeds into weaker academic results. And then there's a couple more paragraphs of bloody nonsense. But the reason why this story was brought to my attention is it's, again, completely messing about with the facts. It was on the website Bleeding Cool, which is a comic and film, basically geek website. And I think it was probably Rich Johnston, I can't remember who actually did that particular report, but he read the OECD report that the story was based on and found out what it actually says. It says that reading comic books is generally associated with a low level of reading performance. This could well be because weaker readers find comic books more accessible. Brilliant. So the headline, no, the first line that said, parents should be alert, if not alarmed, the next time their child picks up a comic book, is blatant bollocks. So it looks like the Canberra Times is the Australian version of the Daily Mail.
What a bunch of galahs.
Well, I'll know next time I'm in Oz, I'll know not to pick that one up then.
It's another website to check out for mental stuff.
Well, yeah,
stories.
I mean, from you know, as someone who reads both novels and comics, and I'm sure you do as well, Trav.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I mean, okay, yes, there's lots of pictures in comics, but the themes of the stories are actually quite grown up and adult. And do require some thought. I mean, if you read something like the Sandman series by Neil Gaiman, that's not kids reading. That is proper adult fiction with some, you know, strong themes in that. So I think to try and play down comic books as dumbing down kids reading, I'd be glad if my kid picked up a comic book, because at least they'd be reading something and not actually just sat in front of the telly.
Sorry, if your vocab's just going to be made up of things like kapow and splat, you know, they're not useful words, really, are they?
the Sandman series is a very good example, because it's kind of about stories, and there's lots of different levels, like subtexts and things going on.
Not much in the way of powers, either.
No, and seeing as you did bring up the subject of sound effects, in Action Comics number 1, in the relaunch version, where they've got a very youthful Superman who's more of a socialist kind of a guy. He goes around fixing crooked landlords and threatening them, throwing them off buildings and catching them at the last minute. It's brilliant. But there's a massive explosion behind him, and he makes this noise, good, just the letters GD in lowercase. And it's supposed to represent just the kind of noise you make when you're winded. But there was a guy in America who refused to stock Action Comics number 1 because he thought that it meant Superman was saying God. He was exclaiming God, and that was too much for him.
Didn't he think that maybe a letter missing in that, though, might have, you know, invalidated his theory slightly? No?
It's okay. A good point. And he was also selling loads of other stuff about like Cthulhu and weird depraved stories. The series Crossed, which is about people going a post-apocalyptic thing where people
are mental
and filth
do dreadful
things to each
other.
Absolute filth. Goat fuck a boy or whatever.
What's your special ability?
No, no, I wasn't talking about comics. I was talking about, you know, pornography in general.
As
he's making this moral stance saying I can't have this because it may or may not say God, but I'm still going to stash a shed load of porn on the top shelf.
Oh yeah, one would imagine. I don't know. And that character's special ability would, of course, be catching goats.
Of course,
evidently.
Which I only imagine is very difficult. I've never tried. Obviously, I've never tried.
Velcro gloves, Trent. Velcro gloves.
Moving on to
nice.
Less comic book news. Rugby World Cup players tweet causes some trouble here.
What a flaming galah!
No, this guy was from Samoa. They sound
Come on,
like they're
let's
Australians.
Hear your Samoan.
What's your, yeah, you do a hacker for us.
Well, it sounds a bit like a Kiwi accent, which sounds a little bit like an Australian accent. So,
center Eliota Fumanau Sapulu. I'm sorry if I spelt your name wrong, but you know you've got just a bit more of persecution for you there. Will not face any disciplinary action following a Twitter rant, which he went on after Samoa lost to Wales. He accused the International Rugby Board of unfair treatment. Basically, he was upset because they only had 3 days off between their last game and Wales had 7. He then went to compare the situation to the Holocaust and apartheid. Obviously, he felt really hard done by, you know. Those Jews never had it so good, you know. At least they, you know, had somewhere warm
to
sleep.
At least they had 4 days between games, not 3.
Yeah. Come on, you guys. Obviously, rugby does not even come close to what Hitler did. There's still injustice and exploitation in this instance. So this is him actually afterwards realizing that he made this stupid analogy comparing the fact that he only had 3 nights sleep to, you know, being gassed in a chamber. However, it's not really making up for the fact, is it?
No.
He's still trying to make out that he's been exploited because of his
If you're a second-class rugby nation, well, that's what you expect, isn't it? So, suck it up, fella. That's what I say. Get good, and you might be able to, have 5 days in between games.
Mm.
I can't believe there was no punishment for that whatsoever. No show of punishment. Like a fine or something, or a reprimand, or maybe that he doesn't play in the next game. Yeah. Comparing it to the Holocaust. I mean, if he can show us a picture of, like, the Belsen fullback that they had, or the Dachau front row, then fine. Then that's proof for your case. But clearly, that was just nonsense. Apartheid rugby, good grief.
Yeah, I guess really, he has just been a bit passionate in his feelings and spoken without thinking, which we're all guilty of doing.
Yeah, but do you know what his actual tweet was? Do you want me to just read it?
I have read the tweet, but read it out.
Okay.
Anyway,
so he said, okay, it's obvious. The IRB are unjust. Wales get 7 days, we get 3. Unfair treatment, like slavery, like the Holocaust, like apartheid. And I...
So just in case you were thinking that maybe we're reading an implication that might not have been there. No,
the implication is there. But that's what I mean. He's obviously, you know, a very passionate man. He's just speaking, he's venting his anger, isn't he? You know, and unfortunately, he's chosen to do it in a domain which is worldwide.
Only the other day I tweeted because I got outside my house, and as I did, right, it started pissing down with rain on me, and I just looked up and went, "Now I know how the Jews feel." Okay, let's move on. Are you going to do another story, or is it time for the feature yet?
Let's have the feature.
I'll feature us up, man.
Okay, here we go. Is your blood sugar okay, Trev?
I'm just checking that.
I don't want you to be...
I can't use that as an excuse.
I don't want you using that as an excuse, no. This is our regular feature, which everybody keeps telling me is amazing. Spot
Damn
the fake.
My blood sugar is perfect. So it's back over you there. 6.5. It doesn't get any better than that.
Quick, have a Mars bar or something.
Oh, yeah, because it can only go down from there.
Send the sky high, Trev.
So, there's going to be three news stories. One of them's fake. You've got to work out which one it is. Steve, what are the scores? I think
you've got three.
Yeah.
I think I've got one.
Mm.
And
Trev is still on zero.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sorry. Mm-hmm.
Now, last week, Trev got very upset by my rape joke. Now, have you given it any more thought, Trev? Is it as bad as you thought it was, really?
Really, that's what you're going with. You've had time to think about it, Trev. Surely you've changed your mind now. No, I think you went a bit far with the comedy aspects of rape. I don't think there are any. Any joke that is going to include that really has to... And disabled rapists as well. And it was...
It's a double whammy.
Okay, well, let's see if I can do better this week. So,
oh God.
Are you ready, guys?
Yeah.
Story number one, European news. Some jealous Italian wives have launched a petition to get a young waitress sacked. The other halves are trying to stop 27-year-old Loredana Popescu from working at an establishment in the town of Cadelbosco Sopra after her antics received widespread acclaim from male regulars. Loredana takes to dancing for her customers, and the blonde bombshell often receives monumental tips from impressed punters. The Romanian immigrant hasn't gone unnoticed by local authorities, though. She narrowly escaped punishment from the taxman, and also, health officials came to investigate her dance routine that involves sexy underwear. She said, "I've nothing against these women, but if their husbands wanted to spend time with them, they'd be at home, and not in my bar." Her employer is described as delighted with the boom in business. Story number two. More European news. Sperm banks are now turning away redheads.
Fake.
Despite a surge in demand...
Fake mongers.
...for sperm donors, the only place where sperm donors with red hair and demand is in Ireland, where supplies are selling like hotcakes. Cryo's director, Ollie Shu, has told a Danish newspaper. He said, "I do not think you choose a redhead, unless the partner, for example, the sterile male, has red hair, or because the lone woman has a preference for redheads, and that's perhaps not so many, especially in the latter case. Cryo's stores are now at capacity, and there's a long list of about 600 people who wish to become donors." And the final story. US news. A new craze sweeping high schools in the southern states of the USA has got conservatives and evangelicals worried. Pinging is a new fashion where boys and girls go to extreme lengths to ensure hardened nipples can be seen under their clothing. Some girls even going so far as to wearing fake nipple inserts in their bras. Worried parents and school groups see this as a blatant expression of sexual promiscuity. The school governors are finding it difficult to tackle the problem, however, given that most students wear tight clothing and it's difficult to discriminate between the pingers and what others would class as a wardrobe malfunction. So, those are the three stories. You've got the Italian wives petitioning for the sexy waitress to be sacked. You've got sperm banks not liking the ginger. And you got pinging. The new fashion craze. So, this week it's you first, Steve.
Oh, go on, let Trav go first.
No, come on.
Let Trav go first.
No, go on, you're first, dude.
Pingers is false.
You're going with pingers?
Yeah.
Okay. Trev?
Well, thanks for that brilliant breakdown of the story. So.
Yeah. This is making
don't try and wring any more information.
Yeah. The idea is you're meant to kind of analyse the stories rather than just make your mind up and say it's that one. But never mind. Trev, will you do the analysis?
John will let something else out. And oh, God. Well, that pinging thing, I can actually believe that. Because the last couple of series of Friends... I don't know if you saw, but Jennifer Aniston, I swear I was thinking that there was product placement going on for M&M's.
I never noticed, Trev.
I swear, they're saying that they're going to show All of Friends again in HD, God knows how, on the Comedy Central Network in this country. And I got to watch a couple of those, even though I've got them on. I've got to watch them just to see if I can read the M. I think you probably could in HD.
Yeah, you might.
But yeah, I think that's kind of plausible. What was the thing about the ginger sperm? I can't call it ginger sperm. That sounds like sperm with blood in it, and you really need to go to the doctor.
Basically, what's happening is it's just they've started saying to people with red hair that they don't want their sperm anymore because they've got enough.
And was it the place where it was still popular was Iowa?
It was, yeah.
I don't believe that. Because any woman who wants to be inseminated by a ginger who is in Ireland will not have much difficulty. Come on. Surely.
Well, this is the story, dude. It's just saying.
Ah, you say that.
This is the story.
But that's the game, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the game. Okay. But yeah, basically, that what it's saying is the only place where red-headed sperm are in, demand is Ireland, where apparently it's doing very well. But everywhere else, no, thank you.
Okay. Well, in order to keep my losing streak intact, I'm going to go for a different one than you, Steve, and I'm going to go for that. I think that the ginger sperm one is the fake, because if it turned out to be the fake and neither of us went for it, and he got away with that one, he would never let it. No, that would be a nightmare for us. So I'm trying to spare us from that.
Okay. Okay.
Let's hear the bad news.
Now, hang on a second. Are you sure? Right, you're both going to stick now.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll tell you why I'm going to stick. It's because I know that the ginger story is actually true, because in my time off this week, I've come across that on the internet already.
Oh.
So I just wanted Trev to carry on with his losing streak, which is why I didn't go into any analysis on it.
Okay, fine.
Wow, and it is
every part of that story.
Thank you.
Every part of that story.
Now, I'm going to do a Darren Brown on you.
Is true. including the Irish bit.
I'm going to do a Darren Brown on you. Do you want to change your mind?
I don't know.
You don't, right, okay. Right, we'll do it in reverse order. Well, no, we'll start with the middle one. The sperm bank one is actually true. Sorry, Trev. I'll just, agree with that. Sorry.
Sorry, Trev.
But as soon as I saw that story, I thought,
I forgot about it, because I was going to bring it in for the podcast, for the actual...
Oh, he's going to have it as a
news story.
Oh, okay.
For those ladies and gentlemen wondering what we're talking about, just go onto the ThinkRant website and look at the About Us.
Yeah,
I'm and all of your questions will be answered.
US news, the pinging craze. That is a true story.
No way.
No, it's not. I made it up.
Yes. In your face, Ginge.
So that means the Italian wives not happy with the very pretty 27-year-old. That's a true story. So what gave it away? Why didn't you even consider the...
Because it's Italy and it had absolutely the ring of truth about it. It was just literally, it sounded far more plausible than teenagers sticking M&Ms down their bras.
Damn it. Seemed almost unremarkable. You know?
Yeah, that's it. The story was just... obviously did happen, but I could just genuinely see it happening, especially in Italy as well.
Fair enough. Well,
see how I carried on my casual racism there, Trev?
Yep.
Well, thanks very much for your for taking part, guys.
No, thank you, John, for going to the time in doing that for us. In finding those stories and in making one up.
And making up pinging.
Yes.
Which
should be true.
Which should be true. Okay, who's going to have a story next?
Oh, I've got a story, although you guys might have the story as well.
Go for it, Trev.
Okay, a story about the Amish men?
No, I've not seen any of the Amish men this week.
Why didn't you explain it, Trev? I've heard of it, but...
Okay. Amish men jailed over orange safety triangles. The mugshots of 8 men are in this story. 8 Amish men who were jailed because they did not attach orange safety triangles to their horse-drawn buggies. The men were all members of a traditional Amish group, The old order of Schwarzentruber, known for simple living, plain dress, and reluctance to adopt modern conveniences. They were locked up after refusing to pay fines issued to them, on the grounds that they failed to adhere to a state law which requires orange triangles on all slow-moving vehicles. The men said that the bright reflector violated their religion, which restricts wearing flamboyant colours and relying on man-made symbols for their safety. So the government was saying, no, that is the colour, just got to deal with it. And they said no, and we refused to pay the fine. So they were sentenced to between 3 and 10 days behind bars at Graves County Jail in Kentucky, in the States. The convicted men brought Bibles to prison with them and were given dark-coloured jumpsuits and sandals so that they didn't have to wear the standard orange coveralls.
Oh. Did this upset you at all?
Well, I thought, oh, it's a bit strange, and the mugshots just look very weird. You know how they are with I refuse to do anything to make myself look good. In fact, I'll grow a great big beard and shave my moustache off, so I look strangely gnomish. It was a bit odd, but the fact that the government refuses to do anything to change the fact that you need to have orange, it needs to be an orange-coloured reflector, but they will change the fact that you're supposed to wear orange coveralls to identify you as a prisoner. I just think that's like saying we will bend our rules, but only a bit. Or
well,
if you
prison.
Just asked us first, then yeah, we could have come to some kind of arrangement. But, you know, so sorry about it. They were banging on about how wonderfully behaved they were in prison. Like as if they expected them to shank somebody, for God's sake.
The thing is, though, Trev, I think in terms of the Amish people refusing to put the triangle on, I think absolutely they should be prosecuted if that's the law. That's the way it goes. You know, they've broken it, they get prosecuted for it, they don't pay the fine, they get sent to jail for it. That's absolutely the right thing to do. So, say fair play to the authorities for sticking their guns. I can kind of see how it's a bit ironic that, you know, they would get to wear dark jumpsuits rather than the orange jumpsuits, but, you know, at the end of the day, the orange triangle is for an issue of safety, isn't it? Whereas, I guess anyone wearing a jumpsuit in a county jail is a prisoner.
Yeah.
I guess is the
point.
Yeah,
but it could be a safety issue as well, because if you were to escape and you're wearing an orange jumpsuit, you're very easy to find, and if you get away, everybody knows that you're a prisoner and therefore dangerous.
Let's be honest.
They clearly said, look at these guys, they're not going to hurt anyone, are they?
But let's be honest, if the Amish people are going to break out of prison and run away, they're not exactly going to, you know, hijack the first car they come across either, are they? And, you know, drive straight.
I think the hot wiring skills are certainly
exactly, maybe
quite compromised.
Maybe a little bit, you know, behind in the times and that. And they're only going to head straight back to their Amish town, so... You know, I think, yeah, you know, I kind of say fair play to the authorities for doing it, to be honest with you, in that respect. I mean, you know, I don't see that being a big issue, I think, you know. Well,
I just got a vision of, like, these five Amish men jumping down a dam, down some and then a forest chase. And
well, that's kind of what I've got going through my head as well, which obviously, you know, the dark colours will help them with that, but...
I just think the first series of Prison Break would have been very different.
Very different indeed.
Okay.
Well, I have some stories. I've got loads.
Yeah, if you want.
Yeah. I've got stories.
Good Lord.
I know. I'm gonna tie two together and cover them very, very quickly, because they're actually stories that we've covered before, but there's just been interesting developments with them this week, I think. So the first one I'll go to is the BBC programme Hard Talk, where you have a gentleman here, Tony Nicholson, who isn't terminally ill, but, as they put it, is in terminal despair. This is a man who has perfect brain function, there's no problem with that at all, but has inability to control his body and is completely paralysed other than being able to move his eyes. In other words, he's got what is known as locked-in syndrome. So perfectly agile brain, perfectly normal in terms of able to think, reason, rational thoughts, but is unable to move, feed himself, do anything that we take for granted. He can't do it. And he is challenging the law
on assisted suicide, or in this case, assisted killings. Because, as we've discussed in the past, the issue with, say, somewhere like Dignitas, excuse me, in Switzerland, is that you have to administer the drugs yourself.
But not excuse you anywhere else. Sorry.
You have to administer the drugs yourself, whereas this man is completely unable to do that. He can make the decision. He's quite cognitive. He can say, I want to end my life, but he cannot administer the drugs to himself. So he wants to get, obviously, the law in this country changed, so that when he finally decides that he has had absolutely enough, which, you know, by his own, from the quick view that I had of the article today, was that he's not at that point yet, but, you know, he does find life just a horrible chore. He wants to be able to end it on his terms. And I think we'll all agree that that's absolutely right. But I just thought it was very interesting that that's ongoing at the moment. It's just something we've talked about before. And, you know, there's another, I think, really good case there to argue the case for assisted dying. And I think, you know, it's completely, again, blows out the water the arguments that the lady on the programme, which you were going to get on the podcast, John, whose name I forget now,
Liz,
about, you know,
Liz Carr.
Liz Carr, that's it. Thanks, Trev. About people, you know, the thing being abused, you know, clearly, again, not in this case. This is a man who's made his decision. He's quite clear on it, and he has, you know, perfect ability to make that decision himself. So I think that's very interesting.
Well, I'd just like to add that, because we're just mentioning Liz Carr by name, it's not like she just represents everything that we disagree with on the subject. For all the other listeners, go ahead and check out the Ouch podcast from the BBC. And she's an advocate for disabled rights. But, you know,
oh, yeah, I guess
we've spoken
to
her about
her
a couple of things.
We just disagree with her, I guess, on this point, really. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's so I just used her as an example because it's, again, somebody we've mentioned in the past and someone who is against assisted dying. So,
There's a thing. In this country, where when they talk about if people will be prosecuted and what's acceptable and what isn't, they often say, well, if it's a terminal illness, then that's okay. And that's dancing around the subject. They call, for instance, MS, the thing that my dad kind of died of, terminal illness. And it's not terminal, because the thing that kills you won't be that. It'll be something else that you get because of it. It'll be written there on your cause of death, but it won't be alone. There'll be other things. Just like nobody died like of AIDS. You die of something else.
Some complication with it, yeah. And it's like this chap, Trev, you know, he doesn't have a terminal illness, you know, but he has no quality of life. Or he has a very, very low quality of life that, you know, I'm guessing at the moment his wife is still there with him. But, you know, should she pass on before him? Should she die before him? Then actually, you know, he's not going to have that relationship there anymore. And would he want to have somebody else coming in, feeding him, changing him?
Yeah.
You know, that's his dignity gone completely.
Before you to your second story, because I know what your second story is. Sorry, if you want to go, I got a story that's related to this one. But sorry, Trevor,
just his case challenges very directly the idea that we should only consider assisted suicide for people who are terminal anyway. That is put in just because it makes people feel better. It's like we're not really killing them. We're just speeding up the process a little bit so we don't have to think about it. And I think that our Western society should be shaken out of this stupor of denying that death actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
It irritates me hugely.
Okay. Just because you were talking about, you know, your partner and the effect it has on them and how these kind of things can really screw up your relationship, etc., I just wanted to segue into this story, which was Pat Robertson declares that Alzheimer's justifies divorce. Okay? So, you know who Pat Robertson is?
I don't actually know.
He's an American... Well, he's an evangelical, isn't he? And he's on the 700 Club, which is a Christian program, and they took a call, and the problem described was a man, his wife had
advanced Alzheimer's. She was no longer the person he remembered. And he was having an affair. And he was just wondering what he thought he should do. Robertson said, well, you should divorce your wife. Rather than have an affair. Because, you know, the most important thing is that you're not, you know, committing adultery. But the... I was going to say the irony, not the irony, the hypocrisy in this is that he, in order to basically justify this divorce, he said, well, she's practically dead anyway, okay? Because
this is the core or is this Pat?
This is Pat now. She's practically dead anyway if she's not the same person. So therefore, you should just divorce her. Just make sure she's cared for, but divorce her and then move on with your life.
Well, why not just have her declared legally dead?
Yeah, well, and the hypocrisy is not necessarily him saying that about divorcing his wife, because I could understand if people wanted to do that. The hypocrisy was, you know, the Terry Schiavo case, where there was a woman who was basically, she was brain dead, just alive on a machine with feeding tubes, and they wanted to pull the feeding tubes.
Right.
She wasn't alive in any sense.
She'd been kept alive by mechanics.
But Pat Robertson was one of the many people campaigning that she should not be allowed to die because she was alive and that all life is sacred and therefore she's not dead.
Right.
So
she's completely undermined the sanctity of that woman's life by saying, well, she's practically dead anyway, so, you know.
The difference is, in one of them, it was just a woman and her problems. In this one, it's about a guy getting his end away. So he obviously wanted to help the guy out. Trev?
Well, he was actually talking quite a bit of sense, not in the way he said it.
No.
But when you lose a personality like that, it's very much like a grieving process that you go through before the death. But there's so much hypocrisy in the evangelical world in America. I got to be careful how I say this, because I don't know if it's this guy. It probably isn't. But there's one... guy who is an evangelical preacher. I've got to be careful not to call him mental, crazy, loser, and a total liar, because I don't believe those things. But he divorced two wives who were incredibly ill in hospital, virtually on deathbeds. Do you know the name of that guy?
I don't know.
It was Billy Graham, wasn't it?
Was there?
I don't know. I just think Trev's
some guy with white hair,
angling at
a famous evangelist
here, isn't he?
No, Billy Graham.
Maybe he's
not
a Republican
guy,
because it's hard to tell the difference between them.
I think you're thinking of a politician, because I read a list the other day of shitty things that people like this have been doing, and I'm sure he was on there, but I can't remember his name. But I think he was a politician.
They organise prayer rallies these days, so it's very hard to tell the difference between them.
But I just couldn't believe, you know, I mean, the bit about, obviously, if she's gone, you know, her brain's gone, then it's not the same woman. You know, I can understand all that, but for me, it's the hypocrisy.
Oh, yeah, I mean, look, I can totally understand the difficulty which the guy who phoned up with the problem is going through as well. You know, it's horrible for him as much as it's horrible for his wife, you know. And, yeah, you know, I can kind of see the point he's making. But as you say, it's just a pure hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Of the point. Because, you know, if you're saying all life is sacred, even if the woman isn't compos mentis, she's still living and breathing, she's still alive.
And more importantly, what happens when he finally goes to heaven, she's there? What's he going to say to her? Sorry I divorced you, but you were a bit of a vegetable. Now you're okay. Sorry.
Now you're okay, fancy a threesome.
Is that allowed?
I don't know.
Okay. That's it. So now you can move on to your...
So now I can move on, can I?
Yeah, okay. Carry on.
Yeah. No, it's a good interlude though, John. Thanks for that.
Okay.
No, this is just... we've spoken about this before, where we've talked about presumed consent. I don't think you were with us then, Trev, when we talked about it originally, in terms of organ donation. Right. And that the Welsh Assembly is trying to bring about legislation whereby everyone in Wales would have presumed consent when it comes to organ transplants. You'd have the right to opt out if you wanted to. And
your families could veto it if there wasn't an explicit instruction from you to say that you wanted to give your organs up for donation. But obviously that's what they're trying to pass. Whereas the Archbishop of Wales, Dr. Barry Morgan, is trying to get the Welsh Assembly to drop these plans of presumed consent, saying that it's wrong, because organ donation surely ought to be a matter of gift and not of duty. Just to make it clear, he's not suggesting for 1 minute that people shouldn't donate organs. He says quite clearly that he wants more people to sign up to become organ donors. And in fact, I believe at the conference where he was speaking, had even arranged for donor cards to be put on every seat. So he's not against organ donation, he's just against presumed consent. What's your thoughts on that, Trev?
I think he hasn't got a leg to stand on. He's digging out the same old nonsense about not wanting to have people who are clearly like brain dead, having them kept alive so their organs can be harvested. It makes him feel very awkward. He's probably got all sorts of religious problems about it, and they're not political, and he's not really caring about people's rights. This isn't a duty thing, because what was it you said, that
it's a gift?
The only way that people would give it is if the family come along and don't object.
No, this is what the proposals from the Welsh Assembly. Sorry, I probably wasn't very clear. The proposals from the Welsh Assembly government are that when it comes to organ donation, they would be presumed consent. So if you were to be involved in an accident tomorrow, you were taken to the hospital, the presumption would be that you were an organ donor.
Yeah.
And that you would be happy for your organs to be used to save lives.
But it can be stopped by the family insisting, right?
Your family can insist unless you are an organ donor registered.
Right. So that doesn't actually change much at all.
No, not really. That's what I kind of thought about, to be honest with you. I would rather, to be honest with you, I don't think the legislation which they're proposing goes far enough, because I don't think... I think families can override donor cards now, which I think is completely wrong. If I want to... I'm on the organ
really
donation.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I believe they can. I'm on the register for organ donation, and my family know perfectly well my wishes, and I would be very upset, not that I could do anything about it, were they to disregard those wishes. But I do believe that is the case at the moment, and I can understand why people would have issues with presumed consent. I mean, particularly if you look at some of the things that have happened in recent times with, you know, children's body parts being kept in jars and things in Alderhay Hospital, I think it was, wasn't it? And such like. But, you know, there are people who are going to die if they don't have these transplant operations. So I'm all for presumed consent, and, you know, I think it should be a case of you have to opt out if you don't want to be a donor. I don't think it should be a case of, you know... but your family can say no. It should be, you know, if you don't want to be a donor, you opt out before you die. That's my thought on it. Anyway, I don't think legislation goes far enough.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm just wondering, though, that, you know, if you're going to be an organ donor, they need to whip them out very quickly, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah, it needs to be done very quickly.
So I'm just wondering, would the family really even have a chance to say no?
Well, they can do. They certainly can do.
What, and they've got to go and take them out of the person they put them into?
Well, no, I mean, it's a case of, I mean, it's not going to happen that quickly, but the family can say no. But certain organs need to be harvested very quickly, particularly their corneas need to be done.
And another question, I don't know if anyone's actually thought about this, right? Say in Wales, we all of a sudden, we see a good rise in the number of organs available because of this legislation. Now, with the waiting list for organs, is that a national thing? Is that like a UK-wide thing?
I think, because something else that I've read around this...
Because you know where I'm going with this, don't you?
Yeah.
I'm wondering
if an English person dies in Wales.
No. I'm thinking that will Wales all of a sudden become an exporter of organs? And so what I'm asking is, are Welsh people, you know, going to be, you know, they're going to be higher up the list?
I think Wales has already got one of the highest donation rates next to Spain, I think. I'm trying to see which Spain has got presumed consent.
See, I can't see the problem I'm fairly sure that the reason why people would object, it's another case of the, I just don't like to think about it, it makes me feel icky.
Yeah.
Which pisses me off no end, because, you know, get over it. Tough shit, there's a problem. People need organs, and we need to do something about it.
Hmm.
You're feeling icky, I really don't care about.
Yeah, and of course they'll be feeling a lot less icky and give it a lot of thought if it's them that needs the organ.
I mean, yeah, here's some statistics, which are from the Archbishop's address. This is directly from his address, you know. So, most European states have more donors per head of population than Britain. In the UK as a whole, there are around 10,000 people waiting at any one time for a new heart, kidney or liver, and 3 people a day die because there is no suitable organ ready for them. The waiting list for a kidney patient is 3 years, whilst heart and liver patients wait on average 6 months. Organ transplants have a phenomenal degree of success these days, and 90% of transplanted organs function really well a year after surgery, and patients who receive them can often live for a decade or two following. So, I mean, that's from his own speech there, I'm lifting that from. So, you know, if we're already far behind the rest of Europe, where a lot of the countries do offer presumed consent, if 3 people a day are dying because they aren't getting enough donors, well, surely that's a case for presumed consent.
Yeah, no, yeah. Definitely.
And as if you object to it, just opt out. Which is right there.
My argument, yeah.
Well, yeah, but they could just throw that back and say, well, if you're up for it, opt in. You know, why, you know.
Well, absolutely. And one of the things which the Archbishop is calling for, which I agree with, is he's saying, well, let's have more opportunity for people to sign up to organ donation. So you're doing your tax returns, or you're doing the national census, have passed something on there which says, I'm willing to be an organ donor, or I'm not willing to be an organ donor. Mm. And make it in more places where people can register, which I agree with that, but then you take the need for that away if you have presumed consent.
But the presumed consent challenges the ickiness factor, mm-hmm. the way that people don't want to think about it. If there was a tick this box if you want to donate, you're like, oh, I don't really want to think about that, so I'll leave it. But if there was a, you have to tick this box if you don't want your organs to be donated after your death, then you'd have to think before you tick that box. Like, I don't like the sound of it, but why don't I like the sound of it? I don't think I'm still going to be in my body after I die, so why not?
I'm just wondering why the Archbishop is against forcing people to think about stuff.
Well, like I said, you know, his argument is very much that it should be a organ donation should be a gift and not a duty. One of the things she said, right?
Sounds like weasel words, but
well, one of the things she said, right? I completely disagree with, to be honest with you. I don't think he's right on it at all. I'll quote directly from his speech, okay? Well, I'll read out and you'll the part which I don't agree with is at the end of the sentence. Organ donation surely ought to be a matter of gift. If one takes organs without consent, on the assumption that by not opting out, a person is tacitly assenting, then that is no longer a free gift to others. An organ donation ought to be precisely that, a gift, an act of love and generosity. Giving organs is the most generous act of self-giving imaginable, but it has to be a choice that is freely embraced, not something that the state assumes. To put it more crudely, it turns volunteers into conscripts. Presumed consent is not really consent at all, merely the assumption that there are no objections. Now, again, I go back to exactly what you said, Trev. If you don't want your organs to be used, opt out. Simple as. Because the argument on the flip side of that, that, you know, well, if people want to be organ donors, they can. Well, the issue with that is there's a terrible amount of apathy in this country.
No shit.
You know, and to get somebody to sign up to do something, do you know what? I haven't got the time it takes to fill out my name and address on a donor card, so can't be asked.
I wonder about cost benefits. Yeah. What would happen if you put out a competition saying, get a free iPad or iPhone if you
just give us your kidney.
Just give it, you know, if you sign up for donor. I'm wondering how cost effective that would be. No. Just give them an iPhone. I'm wondering how cost effective it would be. Because organs have a very high value.
Yeah.
Now, if there's a chance of winning, then you have to have the option of applying online for free without promising your internal organs.
Yes. Yeah. So it's got to be, you know, quid pro quo or whatever you call it,
That's right. It's tricky.
But I just wondering, you know, would that be an expense? How much is it going to cost to give everybody an iPhone?
I don't know.
not that much compared to bloody the cost of Trident or something like that. It's going to be
other smartphones are available.
Other smartphones are available. I just use a generic phone would be just as good. Are we done on this? Because
So that was it. I mean, because I know we've covered it before, but when we covered it previously, Trev wasn't with us then, so I wanted to get Trev's take on it to see where he was coming from with it, and just as an update, really, because it's something we've spoken about before.
Cool. Santorum, the frothy mixture of lube and fecal matter that is sometimes the byproduct of anal. I'm not just mentioning it for the shock factor. Apparently, Republican president candidate Rick Santorum is upset that his name has now become synonymous with this and has pleaded with Google to remove the website.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Called Spreading Santorum, which features a very nice graphic. I don't know, it looks like somebody's spat up a bit of hot chocolate onto the wall there. And it's very tasteful. And then it's just a website basically taking the mick out of him. So he's really upset, and he's asked Google to remove the listing. And they've told him to fuck off.
Great.
So there you go. So that's the happy story of the week. And have you got any more stories?
I've got a Catholic story.
Catholic story. Come on, Trev.
Okay, it's a very quick one. The Belgian Catholic Church is to scream for paedophile priests. Trainee priests in Belgium
face a
batch.
Sorry, was that scream for? Scream for? We want more! Give scream. Us more!
Trainee priests in Belgium face a battery of psychological tests to weed out potential paedophiles. That's pretty much all the story I need to read. Because... how do you check for a potential paedophile?
Actually, I can answer this in the words of Frankie Boyle.
Oh, I don't. Please, not actually go for answering that question.
No. I can, and I shall.
Oh God.
Do you remember when you were watching Biker Grove when you were a kid? Did you ever try and shag the television?
If so, there's a high chance you're a paedophile.
Yes.
Oh.
Lovely. So, yeah. The question has been asked, Trev. It's been asked already.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
So, have a question.
That's actually a good thing.
Do you like to touch boys' bottoms? And if they answer yes, then maybe this isn't the job for you.
Do you know what? I think we should give the Belgian Catholic Church some credit here, because I think they're. You know, they're taking the lead, where the Catholic Church has been so always taking a step backwards and almost burying its head in the sand.
Being reactive rather than proactive.
Yeah. Hmm. You know, they are actually taking steps to say, well, look, we don't want this to happen again. You know?
Well, the Belgian Catholic Church was rocked by a big revelation last year about a bishop. And this is their response to it. So even though scientifically it might not be brilliantly thought out, I don't know what the exact methods are, I don't really know if I want to know what the exact methods are, at least it's something proactive, like you say.
So it's a nice surprise
to see them do it.
Kind of be, yeah, congratulated for it in a way, oddly.
Yeah.
I have, if you're okay to move on, I have
two stories.
Yeah, one I'm just going to... I've been ill, Trav. I've been off work, do you know what I mean? I've been able to surf the internet to my heart's content.
And I haven't even got to the big story of the week.
No, I know. Well, that actually was one of my second stories. But just very, very quickly, this one. It's absolute trash reporting, but it's also really good news. It's in the Daily Mail.
Hmm.
And the headline is, Todd Palin will file for divorce and advisors tell Sarah White House dream is over.
Yes!
If you read the article, it's absolute pure tabloid trash gossip.
But
if it's true, it means we don't have to worry about Sarah Palin. That's one we can cross off the list. We just got to worry about Backman and all the other nutters.
Oh God, yeah, she's terrifying.
I mean, that's one of my concerns. Is at least Lisa Palin, she's splitting the vote somewhat, you know. But
We should point out to everybody that the massive relief that we were just expressing there was not about the divorce. The divorce in the family. Obviously, no, that's terrible.
No, of course not. Or the fact that she's going to be back on the market. I'm not, you know, I'm not going to try and send her a Valentine's Day card or anything.
No. No, no, it's the fact that the White House dream is over, and it's after the release of Explosive Biography, which says that the press would have a field day probing into her past if she ran for presidency. Sources say Tea Party Darling has been destroyed by tell-all book. Todd plans to file a divorce, fed up with wife's scandals. McGuinness says Palin is a fraud, hypocrite, and 10th grade mean girl. So that gives you the idea of the reporting within the article. Apparently she was knocking off some basketball players. She snorted coke. You know, all those nasty things which the Tea Party says, you know, are bad things.
That sounds like she had some fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so there we go. That was it. I mean, a bit of good news. Hopefully, no more Sarah Palin. Yes.
Do you remember back when we had no idea who Sarah Palin was?
Oh, those were the
days. Do you remember those days?
No, we just used to be able to take the mick out of George W. Bush. He was the only person worth taking the mick out of, wasn't he?
That is a good segue.
Here we go.
And that is into the big story of the week, Troy Davis.
Oh, there's two big stories of the week then. Yeah.
Troy Davis.
Oh, crikey.
Even George W. Bush was against this man's execution.
I think that says it all, really, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, what more do you need to know?
The man was actually executed for the sake of procedure rather than anything.
Pure bureaucracy.
But I'm not, to be honest, I'm not actually interested in whether he actually did it or not. I'm still thinking, why, you know, without the 100% certainty, why are we still executing people?
John, this is the point. There were two men executed this week in America. One was Troy Davis. The other person, tragically, I can't remember his name, but he was a white supremacist who murdered a black man by tying him with a chain to the back of his pickup truck and driving for miles with him behind him, only stopping when the body was dismembered, when he rolled over a concrete storm drain and the head and arm came off. That's when he stopped driving. He was executed this week as well. Now, he was guilty of that crime. Whereas Troy Davis, arguably, isn't guilty of the crime. You know, there are...
It's an unsafe
conviction. But, you know, either of those cases, one truly horrific, one a truly horrific miscarriage of justice, potentially, neither of them should be executed.
No.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you know,
most of the people who get executed in America are white. If you look at representation of population size, I think it's 8 times more likely that a black defendant is going to get the death penalty. You know, 8 times more likely to get the death penalty if you're black.
Yeah. You know, I mean, in
particularly
Troy
if
Davis's,
you've killed a white person.
You know, in Troy Davis's account, one of the witnesses who said they'd seen I'm reading from a website here. One of the witnesses who appeared at Davis's 1991 trial said they'd seen Davis beating up a homeless man in a dispute over a bottle of beer and then shooting to death police officer Mark McPhail. Basically said that he was illiterate, couldn't read the police statement that they put in front of him when he signed it, and completely recants that testimony. Now, surely, there were, I believe, 9 witnesses who gave evidence. 7 of those 9 witnesses, including this man, have recanted their evidence. Surely, if even one of them is recanting their evidence, and that evidence is used to convict that person, considering that there's no ballistic evidence to say that he did it, there's no DNA evidence to say that he did it, and they're only going by
the word of mouth. Well, if it happened during a trial, normally it'd just be a mistrial.
Yeah, and they're going by the word of mouth. 7 of the 9 defendants, of the witnesses, sorry, have recanted. Surely that's ground for people to be thinking, do you know what? Maybe, okay, we'll say this guy's guilty, and maybe we'll give him a retrial, but we're not going to execute him because we may be wrong.
And I can't believe that they're going to execute people simply on hearsay.
Exactly, which is exactly what's happened here. Hearsay, which people have recanted.
Oh, I'd just like to point out, I've called up the figures that I couldn't remember. It's actually only 3.5 times more likely to get the death penalty if you're black than if you're white. So that means they're not racist at all. I just hate to have bad data propagated by me.
You know, I admire that, Trev, to be fair. I like that.
Cheers.
So yeah, I just think it's an absolute travesty of justice. I think,
it is.
You know,
and I got a bad feeling about this, because I bet you in the years to come, more will happen on this. Especially if journalists are going to have a sniff of this. They're probably going to look into it more than the police did.
Yeah.
What happens when they do, you know, if they do find the person who...
well, apparently, when there's somebody else who's been implicated, is somebody who has admitted the killings.
Hmm.
Another inmate in prison, in another prison, has admitted shooting the police officer. So, you know, if that's not some kind of reasonable doubt to at least stay the execution, I don't know what is.
I'm wondering.
The man implicated is the one who first implicated Davis as the killer.
That's right, yeah. Sylvester Coles.
And I'm just wondering that, you know, what is the point of this, what was it, this hearing board or pardon board or whatever it is that this has gone to and they've rejected it? What is their purpose? If there was ever a textbook example of an unsafe conviction, this would be it. And
absolutely.
Yet they still thought, no, we'll go with the procedure. What
but
is the point
what?
Of their existence?
Unfortunately, and you know what, I hope I'm wrong saying it, but I think it's an example of institutional racism still prevalent in the southern states of the United States today. You know, this is a black man who has allegedly killed a white police officer in Georgia. You know?
And it also
that
looks
just
like
screams to me as being,
if there's truth to this idea that statements have been given to people to sign and they weren't knowing what's in it, then that also points to corruption.
Yeah.
So
which is part of the institutional racism, which, you know, we saw, you know, back in the days when you had people like Martin Luther King fighting against this sort of thing, you know, when people were fighting to overcome this bigotry.
I'm just hoping that some journalist now is going to really sink his teeth into this and hopefully get to the bottom of it or something. Or there can be at least some federal investigation. So, because this doesn't make any sense. And this doesn't make any sense on the surface. So, it's not just a conspiracy theory. Do we have time to do the last story? Frank Skinner.
Oh, good, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Surprised this wasn't Trev's Catholic story.
Yeah, good point.
Well, I thought about it, but it's actually from a column that he did in 2009, so it's not really that topical.
No.
It's only that he's got a book of his collecting all of his newspaper columns. For those listeners who don't know who Frank Skinner is, a comedian who's been doing the column for a while.
Yeah. But this is quoted in Chortle. In a conversation with the Archbishop of Canterbury last night, the Catholic comedian said, atheists we might see as people like those who deny global warming. You might celebrate their right and defend their freedom of speech to deny global warming, but if they're wrong and millions of other people have taken their view, then it could end in a terrible, terrible disaster for a lot of people. So, although he doesn't explicitly say it, for me that sounds like Pascal's wager. Am I?
Yep.
And then he just continued with how he thinks that all the comedians on the circuit are atheists because it's cool. Trev, do you have anything to say?
Yeah, totally. The way that he's saying that is totally discounting the option of atheism. It's like saying, I think that they're secretly Christian, but they're just saying that they're atheists because it's cool and trendy. Well, why can't people just have no religion?
Sure. Now, the thing is, if he'd said that, oh, they're just pretending to be cool, I'd have just let him off on it, and I'd gone, oh, okay, whatever, you're just a bit of a conspiracy theorist. But to actually say that there's a lot of people out there who basically, they decide on what they believe based on what's cool, it doesn't even make sense. I don't think it's possible. Do you believe anything just because you want it to be true?
Well, I have experienced that from other people. Huh? You know, some people really simplistically believe that there's no such thing as free will because it all comes down to materialism, and just because we haven't got anything to measure free will and personality, we assume it can't possibly be real.
Shut up on that, okay? I won.
You know, that kind of childish...
PZ said I won, so look, just take it gracefully.
PZ right? said, PZ said.
Yeah, exactly. Argument from PZ. Right. Now, and not just that, but Christine Odone, has now said that Frank Skinner is a hero for standing up. And now... No matter what Frank Skinner was trying to say to the Archbishop of Canterbury, he's probably now thinking, shit, I got her now. I don't want to be even seen with her. But now...
I'm sure he would have been smirking at the time that he was saying it. I'm not entirely meaning this kind of a way. You know how he is.
No, I know. But so Christine Odone now says that it's great that he's come out as a Catholic. So it just goes to show that she hasn't actually heard of any of his stuff, because he hasn't been quiet about it in the past, has he?
No.
So I don't know what she's on about. And basically she's been lauding him, saying that... and she got to beat the old liberal conspiracy. Apparently the media is just run by godless liberal... elitist people. So we need more Catholics in there, apparently. So there you go, that's that story. But Frank Skinner, I mean, just looking at the context, if he actually believes that, that makes him an idiot. if he actually believes that and he thinks that people just decide that there's no God simply because they think it's cool, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. Second to Pascal's Wager. We don't have time to go through Pascal's Wager. Maybe we can do it next week, Trev.
Sure. Because there's several ways of completely discounting it.
Steve?
I just have one more thing to say.
Holy crap.
I know. This is like, you know, years worth.
We should have called this the Steve week, not the Trevor week.
Hang on. I just got to tell Zach. Zach, Steve has done like 5 stories this week. You should. You should see his face.
It's true.
See, my son's fainted now. I'll go and get him.
No, it's just this is one of the greatest pieces of irony that I've seen in a hell of a long time. Julian Assange is complaining that somebody has released an unofficial autobiography about him.
What? They've leaked it.
Brilliant.
Sorry, I just that irony.
I did see that story, and yeah, it was so high on the irony meter, I thought it must be Poe, but I'll have to look into that one. Great. Right, well, I think we're done. We've gone over this week, but we have to, because last week, if you didn't include the bonus features of Trev's review and my clitoris thing, it was a 50-minute podcast, so we owe the viewers. So, sorry there's been no review of Richard Dawkins' latest book. It arrived late, but I do now have it, so I'm going to start reading it. Apart from that, Trevor, do you want to sing us out?
One day I may carry on with that threat and terrify the listening several.
That's all right. I got auto-tune on this PC.
Oh,
just like the X Factor.
Let's clean it up. So, all right then. Well, thanks very much for people listening. We'll catch you next week. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.